It's Monday, December 29th, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hello, Stashers, and welcome to the last Monday of 2008. Boy, it's been quite a year, and a lot of the media are doing their year-end retrospectives. We're going to do that here this week on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. And while you're out there surfing the intertubes, check out celebstoner.com as well. Steve Bloom's putting up his top 10 lists of the year in cannabis entertainment, including the top 10 movies and top 10 songs and so on. So I figured we'd do something similar here at the Daily Audio Stash, but give it our own Daily Audio Stash flavor. Today I'm going to be presenting my picks for the top 10 stupid stoner stories of the year. That's all those headlines that I pick out of the mass news feeds of cannabis and marijuana throughout the year, involving cannabis users demonstrating, let's say, how not to be a responsible cannabis user. We'll bring you that shortly. Also, in looking back at 2008, I wanted to focus on my pick for the politician of the year. No, it's not Barack Obama. For me, it's Representative Barney Frank, the Democrat from Massachusetts, for introducing the first federal legislation regarding cannabis decriminalization in 30 years. That's the H.R. 5843, which he debuted the idea for on the Real Time for Bill Maher show, and later on introduced the bill. This bill is expected to be reintroduced during the Obama administration in the next Congress, so we'll replay my interview with Representative Frank, as well as a couple of clips from him on other media. We've also got some great music here in your musical break that was recommended to me by many listeners of the Daily Audio Stash, so thank you. Please get those suggestions coming in here to stash@normal.org. I'm always looking to break through artists that are friendly to the 420 cause. All right, it's the last Monday podcast of the year. Let's buckle up and get ready for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. President-elect Obama's Change.gov is open for questions again. Last time President-elect Obama asked us about the issues that were important to us, the number one question, and 31% of the top 100 questions, had to do with the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. The incoming administration only gave us 11 words in response. President-elect Obama is not in favor of the legalization of marijuana. The Change.gov site is now open for round two. I didn't initially see any cannabis questions in the top 10, but it did only open today. Fortunately, there is a search questions feature you can use to type in cannabis, marijuana, or drugs, and find all those questions. Then you can vote for them to help them rise in the standings. I distilled my many possible questions down to just one question, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd search for it and vote for it. In 1972, President Nixon formed a commission of scientists to issue an unbiased study regarding marijuana policy. It recommended decriminalization. After 36 years of research and 13 medical marijuana states, would you form a new commission to study cannabis policy? Do you suppose if legalized cannabis is once again the number one question that maybe they will start to understand that the public is far ahead of the politicians on the cannabis issue? Would the great Aussie firewall block normal.org? From Yahoo Tech News, Sydney, Australia. A proposed internet filter, dubbed the Great Aussie Firewall, is promising to make Australia one of the strictest internet regulators among democratic countries. Consumers, civil rights activists, engineers, internet providers, and politicians from opposition parties are among the critics of a mandatory internet filter that would block at least 1,300 websites prohibited by the government, mostly child pornography, excessive violence, instructions in crime or drug use, and the advocacy of terrorism. Well, first of all, it won't work. People that want those sites will still be able to get them, and people who are looking for something else, like breast cancer, sex education, or child porn arrests, won't find what they're looking for. But what I'd notice in the context of this podcast is the instructions in crime or drug use. That sounds very broad to me, and I wonder if that would mean pro-drug law reform sites like this one would be inaccessible down under. It becomes a Zen koan if you think about it. We believe laws that punish the personal use of cannabis are wrong, but personal use of cannabis is illegal. So does arguing against the existence of a crime advocate crime? I don't think so. If you effectively ban people from discussing the righteousness of our laws, how can you have a democracy?
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Will daily pot usage hurt my health? From CNN.com. The CNN website has a feature where people can send in their medical questions and receive an expert answer. This was the question I saw today. Will daily pot usage hurt my health? Asked by Pat in Kansas. I don't smoke cigarettes or drink alcohol, but I have smoked marijuana daily for the last 25 years. Although I have enjoyed good health all my life, I would like to know what concerns I should have with long-term marijuana usage. Well, I'd say no alcohol and tobacco already just added years to your life. You've been a toker for 25 years and say you have good health. I believe you because I've been toking for nearly 20 years and have fantastic health. I'd say your biggest concern, long-term, isn't health-related. It's avoiding arrest, incarceration, civil asset forfeiture, and losing your job, licenses, home, and children. But I'm no doctor. You really need long-term medical advice as, I assume, at least a 43-year-old person looking after your health in your geriatric years. So naturally, for the expert answer, CNN turns to a pediatrician from the Children's Medical Group, Dr. Jennifer Hsu.
Expert answer. Thank you for this important question. Roughly 40% of Americans have tried marijuana, and about 10% continue to use it on a regular basis, so this issue is probably more common than one might expect.
Good so far. Our government's national survey on drug use and health says 40.6% of Americans 12 and older have tried cannabis, 10.1% use cannabis annually, and 5.8% use cannabis at least once per month. About 1.3% of Americans 12 and older are daily cannabis users, and that's defined as greater than 300 days per year of cannabis use. For comparison's sake, the number of people who have tried cannabis is about the same as the number of adult females in America. Annual users equal about as many non-Cuban, non-Puerto Rican Hispanics in this country. There are about the same number of monthly users as Native Americans, Native Alaskans, and Asians combined, and people like me, who use nearly daily, outnumber Puerto Ricans.
The active chemical in marijuana, THC, works on receptors in the brain. In the short term, or within hours of smoking the drug, lower doses can cause feelings of relaxation or distort your senses, whereas higher doses may create hallucinations, learning and memory problems, and impaired coordination, which is why it's not a good idea to drive or play sports when under the influence.
Well, this is true and good advice. I don't know about the within hours part. It's a couple of hours at best, but within hours makes it sound like it's more than two. The feelings of relaxation and sensory distortion take place within seconds.
Over the long term, the tar in marijuana may put a person at risk for lung cancer, much as cigarette smoke does.
Lie. Dr. Donald Tashkin at the UCLA Medical Center showed that even heavy chronic smoking of cannabis does not lead to increased risk of head, neck, or lung cancers. And he's no pro-pot doctor. He was trying to prove the cannabis lung cancer connection to bolster the ONDCP's anti-pot propaganda when he discovered this.
Smoking marijuana can also cause asthma, bronchitis, sinus infections, and a sore throat, especially in heavy users.
Inhaling smoke is never a healthy choice for your lungs, period. That said, cannabis smoke is far less harmful than tobacco smoke. According to the National Institutes of Medicine, quote, cannabinoids or their analogs may also find a place in the management of severe intractable asthma, end quote. And as cannabis is a bronchodilator and antispasmodic, some of the states that recognize medical use of cannabis also allow its use for asthma. Cannabis smoking can lead to minor respiratory complications, but not to emphysema as tobacco smoke will. According to researchers writing in the Archives of Internal Medicine, quote, long-term marijuana smoking was associated with an increased risk of certain respiratory complications, including cough, bronchitis, phlegm, and wheezing, end quote. Of course, the answer to this point is to use a cannabis vaporizer rather than smoking it. Vaporization heats the bud to the point where THC evaporates, but not hot enough for the plant matter to burn. Thus, you receive all the cannabinoid medicine goodness without all the harms of smoking.
Marijuana may also impair the immune system's ability to fight off certain infections.
Lie. Cannabis is recognized as a treatment for people living with HIV/AIDS. Why would doctors recommend something that suppresses the immune system to people suffering from a disease that compromises the immune system? In fact, data indicates that cannabis use does not adversely impact the CD4 or CD8 T cell counts and may even improve immune function.
There is also some evidence that marijuana can trigger heart attacks in people who already have or are at risk for coronary heart disease.
Well, she may be referring to a study we reported on earlier this year, which found among cannabis users an increase in a protein that increases the risk of clogged arteries, which increases the risk of heart attacks. Of course, this increased protein was found in subjects who used 11 to 50 joints per day. The problem with the study, however, is they didn't find out whether those heavy cannabis smokers actually had more heart attacks. Other research has shown that frequent cannabis users are as nutritionally healthy as non-smokers and actually have a lower body mass index, a measure of obesity, than non-smokers. According to Dr. Murray Middleman, Director of Cardiovascular Epidemiology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, quote, "The risk of heart attack was slightly increased in the first hour after smoking marijuana, but dissipated shortly after that. The heightened risk from marijuana was found to be roughly equivalent to vigorous exercise for someone of average fitness and far less than that posed by air pollution," end quote. Middleman estimates the risk of a heart attack for an otherwise healthy 50-year-old man after smoking marijuana is about 10 in a million. Now, if you're not otherwise healthy, if you do have heart disease, you probably shouldn't smoke cannabis. But that's not you, Pat from Kansas. You said you were in good health, right?
Because marijuana acts on the brain, chronic use can also make it difficult to concentrate, pay attention, and learn. Some studies have shown that regular marijuana smokers may function at a lower intellectual level all the time, since the drug can keep affecting the brain for weeks after using.
Not at all possible. The chemical that affects the brain is delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. THC is processed and out of your bloodstream within 2 to 5 hours. After that, the only thing affecting the brain for weeks are the inert metabolites of THC, known as carboxy-THC. This is the metabolite that is picked up on drug tests for weeks after using, and it is absolutely non-psychoactive. Carboxy-THC only proves you have used cannabis in the past. It does not indicate present impairment. This would be kind of like saying alcohol will affect your brain for weeks because we found beer cans in your garbage 2 weeks after your party. Researchers writing for the Journal of Psychopharmacology found, quote, "Marijuana smoking has virtually no effect on complex cognitive task performance, including reaction time, memory, and mental calculation in experienced users," end quote.
People who try to stop using marijuana after years of use may have withdrawal symptoms, such as anxiety, irritability, drug craving, and insomnia, making it hard to quit.
Few things insult me more than anti-cannabis blowhards talking about the withdrawal symptoms from quitting cannabis. As a 12-year-old boy, I watched my father spend 3 weeks locked up in a single-wide trailer trying to quit alcohol and amphetamines cold turkey. He locked himself in there because, as average Americans, we had no health care insurance that would cover inpatient drug rehab, even if there were beds available, which there weren't. When you can show me a pothead writhing in agony, puking on the floor, shivering with cold sweats, picking bugs off his skin, trembling uncontrollably, and cowering in fear of death, then you can talk to me about marijuana's withdrawal symptoms.
Because of the possible difficulty quitting the drug and the many health concerns associated with long-term smoking, I advise regular users to consult with their doctor or an addiction medicine specialist to help them stop.
Because this pediatrician has no idea what she's talking about, I advise regular users to invest in a vaporizer. Hey there, Stashers. How would you like to win a 6-night trip to the most cannabis-friendly spot on Earth? That's right, a trip to Amsterdam for 4, sponsored by the Normal Foundation. It's an exciting new fundraiser for our organization, partnering with Win for Charity to help us raise money so we can provide programs and services to normal members like you. Win for Charity is an online hosting solution for charitable organizations that allows us to harness the power of the internet to increase our fundraising ability. How do you win? Simple. Just go to www.winforcharity.com/normal. That's win, the number 4, charity.com/NORML. Click your buy ticket now button, then just select normal as your charity. The vacation package includes 6 nights in an Amsterdam city hotel, including breakfast, entrance to the Rijksmuseum, and a canal bus day pass, round-trip airfare, private transfers from airport to hotel and hotel to airport, a full-day tour to Delft, The Hague, and Madurodam, and a full-day tour to the windmills and Volendam. Get your tickets now at winforcharity.com/normal. Your ticket helps to support our organization, and you could win 6 nights in Amsterdam. Thank you.
Good Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
And now it's time for our compilation of the top 10 Stupid Stoner Stories of 2008. Remember, these stories aren't meant to denigrate the responsible users of cannabis. They are meant to be teachable moments to the community on what not to do. Number 10.
Marijuana bales fall out of semi-truck.
Poor guy. This wasn't so much stupid as it was unlucky. He's hauling bales of cannabis in a belly dumper, those angled bottom type of truck that usually haul gravel. The belly doors opened for an unknown reason and dumped a couple of bales onto the parking lot of the truck stop. Number 9.
Easy to spot pot and its charges in Sheboygan robbery.
This is a consistent theme in these stupid stoner stories. Police arresting someone because the cannabis or the bong is right out in the open where they don't need a warrant to see it. This guy calls the cops because his apartment was robbed, but he forgot to put away the pot. Number 8.
New Hampshire mom calls cops on son, ends up under arrest.
This is a variation on the previous theme, where people allow police to search without a warrant, knowing they have contraband on the premises. This woman in New Hampshire calls the cops to bust her son for drugs when she allows them to search the home and they find cannabis in her bedroom. Number 7.
Taco customer finds marijuana in takeout bag.
Another example of the entrepreneurial weed dealer who decides to combine their drive-through fast food job with cannabis distribution. Unfortunately, this dealer placed the delivery in the wrong customer's bag and got arrested when the customer called the cops. Number 6.
Man returned burgers, marijuana to Dairy Queen.
And this example is the opposite of the previous one, where a cannabis consumer buys some fast food, throws his cannabis in the bag with the burgers to make it all easier to carry, but then realizes he got the wrong burger order and takes it back to the restaurant, forgetting his cannabis was still in the bag. Number 5.
Man mooned crowd only minutes after being released on marijuana charge.
It's a bit unfair to call this a stupid stoner story because the man admits to a drinking problem and claims to have been drunk, but I just couldn't resist a story where a guy is released on bail for possession of cannabis and then 10 minutes later is burying his ass in the public square. Number 4.
Text message sent accidentally to cop leads to arrests.
There is a whole class of stupid stoner stories that involve people forgetting that cell phones, text messaging, email, and regular mail can often be intercepted, accidentally or on purpose, by the authorities. Number 3.
Kansas man sentenced for throwing marijuana into jail.
Now we're getting close to the stupidest thing I can imagine. This man was trying to get cannabis into the jail for his friend by throwing it over the jail fence. Because, you know, there'd never be a camera watching the jail fence. I can only think of one place more heavily watched than a jail. Number 2.
Betting with weed.
And that would be a casino. You gotta check the link on the Stash blog, because you can see the security footage video of a man in California throwing a bag of cannabis on the blackjack table as his bet. Then, when the dealer gives him this look, he takes back the bag and just dumps out a couple of buds. I guess he figures he was at the 2-gram limit table. And the number one stupid stoner story of 2008...
Miss Teen Louisiana loses crown over pot.
Now this entry takes the number one not just for the stupidity of the actions, but the high profile of the stupidity. The blonde beauty queen is already a stereotype for dumb, but this young woman made the list by skipping out on a $46 lunch tab with three friends. She left behind her purse, which contained some cannabis, and when she returned to retrieve it, the police were waiting to arrest her for cannabis and for the dine and dash. That's your top 10 stupid stoner stories of 2008. Join us on tomorrow's podcast when we'll be going over the top 10 Reefer Madness headlines of 2008.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent the state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check NORML.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. A few people have emailed the Stash to tell me about Goose. Tony Siragusa, the Goose formerly on the defensive line of the Baltimore Ravens? Rich Goose Gossage, the former Hall of Fame relief pitcher for the Yankees? Maverick's co-pilot and best buddy in Top Gun? Of course not. This Goose is the Florida hip-hopper found at myspace.com/goosetunes420. I don't have much more information than that. His page doesn't seem to include a bio or background or even a photo. But he does have some excellent tracks on a new CD called The Salt Mine Sessions, and you can download that from CD Baby or iTunes. Today, I'm featuring this song. This is from Goose and the album The Salt Mine Sessions, and the song called No Seeds.
No seeds, no seeds. No seeds, no seeds.
I smoke Miami-Dade drippy in that Arizona icky, cause my humble stickies for that one pull quickie. Yeah, I hit great babe in the devil's blue. Met the Super Jack Green cracking Elvis too. Since he skunk number four, that uptown roar, Dominican haze, we blaze from the botanical store. Got the butterscotch of wine and the juicy fruit lemon. New York sour diesel and some Northern Light 7. Like the red hairs on it. And looking deeper, it's the backyard boogie woogie Brooklyn creeper. Medicinal secret sauce, white smurf, psycho chronic. In that Maui Waui Honolulu hydroponic. I want a truck full of BC buds with no stems. Jack Harry, Mary Jane, and all of my friends. Give me Orange Crush, Bogberry, OG Kush, and some chocolate tie stick from the bush.
In the world like weed, that's why I'm smoking on a blunt, puffing on a joint, lighting up a bowl. No seeds, no seeds. That ganja's all I want. It's really all I need. Ain't nothing in the world like weed. That's why I'm smoking on a blunt, puffing on a joint, lighting up a bowl. No seeds, no seeds. That ganja's all I
ganja, the Indo, the Kong, and the Cess. The Phillies, the Dutches, the papers, the bong is the best. Yeah, I'm into Cali Mist, green burns clean, but there's nothing like that old school G13. Give me puke, berry, pure kush, blueberry bud. In the grapefruit sativa, someone grew in the mud. I want the early girl shiver in the purple flower. With the cat piss, hash plant, and turtle's power. Took the crystal champagne, the bubonic, supersonic, Holland Hope, white widow, big blue chronic. From the Delta 9, Romulan, and Afghan cross. A little pussy kush, sweet tooth, strawberry cough. Give me the super silver citrus and the kryptonite freeze. The fuzzy wuzzy indica from Amsterdam seeds. I want the four-way Cinderella, great white shark, Jamaican lamb's bread, Colombian dog.
Nothing in the world like weed, that's why I'm smoking on a blunt. Puffing on a joint, lighting up a bowl. No seeds, no seeds. That ganja's all I want. It's really all I need. Ain't nothing in the world like weed. That's why I'm smoking on a blunt. Puffing on a joint, lighting up a bowl. No seeds, no seeds. That ganja's all I want. It's really all I need. Ain't nothing in the world like weed.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
One of the big stories this year was the introduction of H.R. 5843, the first bill in 30 years to address the decriminalization at the federal level of cannabis. And this was introduced by the man I'm considering my politician of the year for this year, Representative Barney Frank, the Democrat from Massachusetts. A lot of us first became aware of his intention to file this bill on the show Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO.
I understand you have a new law that you're about to introduce that warmed the cockles of
my
heart.
I'm not even going to take advantage of that one.
Tell me about it, Barney. It's
I'm going to file a bill as soon as we go back to remove all federal penalties for the personal use or possession of small amounts of marijuana.
Define small.
Later, Representative Frank echoed a theme that he said many times in interviews about this issue, that the public is way ahead of the politicians on the issue of cannabis.
And I now think it's time for the politicians in this one to catch up to the public. The notion that you lock people up for smoking marijuana is pretty silly. And it's especially now, but I was going to call it, you got a name for it, the Make Room for the Serious Criminals Bill.
Yeah, right.
People's lives go to jail a lot worse than it does to smoke a lot.
In July, Representative Frank appeared in a press conference with supporters of the bill, including Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of NORML, where he explained his reasoning behind the support of ending federal penalties for adult marijuana possession.
I don't think that it is the government's business to tell you how to spend your leisure time. Now, there are a lot of things that people do that I don't do. And I think they should be free to do them. There are things I do that other people don't do, and I want to be free to do them. This notion that we somehow have to either approve or criminalize all human activity is, as I said, a great misunderstanding of what's needed for a liberal, in the broad sense, government, a government in which people are free to do as they wish, unless they are damaging somebody else, or unless, in rare cases, you believe that they are so out of control that they can't be trusted to make their own judgments. I believe that smoking marijuana is an example of this. There are people who smoke marijuana to excess. There are people who drink to excess. There are people who do a number of other things to excess. We should deal with the excesses, Particularly, we should deal with any social behavior that occurs as a result of the excesses, but not lock people up or use scarce federal resources to arrest people for using or possessing for personal use marijuana. Now, if a state wants to use its legal resources for this, the state's free to do so. Although, as we know, there are, I think, is it 11 or 12 states? 12 states that have voted to allow the use of marijuana for medical purposes with varying degrees of stringency in how they apply that. And in most of those cases, I believe it's been done by referendum. Only one, I think, was by the vote of the legislature, my neighbors in Rhode Island. So what we've had is, particularly under this administration, the spectacle of people who believe in limited government and states' rights sending federal law enforcement people in to prosecute people who have used medical marijuana in conformance with their own state's laws. This would end that. This would put an end to that practice. So that's what this bill is about. The legislation, as I said, removes federal penalties. If states choose to use their resources this way, they can. We're talking about imprisonment, and they say, well, not many people are affected by it. I never understood why people thought it was a defense of a law staying on the books, that it was rarely used.
Shortly after the press conference in the beginning of August, Representative Frank was my guest here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash to tell our listeners about H.R. 5843. Congressman Barney Frank has represented Massachusetts' 4th District since 1981 and is a champion of civil rights on Capitol Hill. This Wednesday, he announced his bill to end federal penalties for the personal possession of marijuana, the first such legislation introduced in about 30 years. So thank you for joining us on the show, Representative Frank.
You're welcome. I'm glad to have a chance to continue to carry the word.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you've been a champion of this issue in one form or another. I know you've sponsored the state's rights to medical marijuana bill, which has had some trouble getting through the House. So what encouraged you to move forward now with full decriminalization, which is much more controversial?
Well, it is a position I, frankly, have been advocating for, because I did this when I was in the state legislature in Massachusetts in 1973 and 1974. I thought now it was time to be able to do it. Look, I've always felt this, but you don't want to raise an issue, at least I don't want to raise an issue, if I think the overwhelming reaction is going to be negative, because people can kind of get locked in a negative way. I have felt for some time now that the public is clearly ahead of the politicians on this one. That's not always the case. There are issues where I think the public sometimes doesn't see through some propaganda, but it did occur to me that the public, and particularly young people, were ahead. It's also, frankly, probably because we have the internet now. This is not an issue that the newspapers and networks are going to give a lot of attention to, but the internet exists as a way to communicate with people who care about this. And I particularly, frankly, I've been pleased to see that a lot of younger people have gotten, it seems, more interested in politics these days, probably because Senator Obama appeals to them, also because of the environmental issue, and, that's an obvious one. When I speak to student audiences, I say, look, in terms of global warming, by the time it really gets bad, I'll be dead. So I would assume you guys would be the ones that want to deal with it. So it did seem to me this is a good time to begin this discussion, because I think the public is ready to educate my colleagues, and because you got a lot of young people who will join in.
Now, you're close to the end of the session, so it's likely that this bill would be heard and debated in the next Congress. Do you feel that there's going to be a significant difference in the opinion of the upcoming Congress on this issue?
There will be. Look, I don't think we're going to be able to get it passed in the next Congress or two. I am optimistic we'll ultimately be doing this. What you really need to do is begin the conversation. I need my colleagues to be hearing from people. That's why I'm really glad that we're able to do this, and I've done some other radio interviews. A number of my colleagues already, because there's been some publicity on it, came to me and said, hey, I was in my district, and somebody said, but I signed on to your bill, tell me about it. So what we need, this is one where the public's going to have to give the lead to the members of Congress, but I think that can happen.
Now, this debate is one that's kind of different than a lot of other debates on Capitol Hill, because you're going to get significant pushback on this from the executive branch in the form of the ONDCP, which is mandated by law to oppose any sort of measures that might decriminalize or legislate cannabis.
I think that will diminish when we are rid of the Bush administration and its extreme right-wing operation. I must say it is interesting at a time when the administration tells us they can't afford to put money into cleaning up Superfund sites or helping us with public transportation or providing adequate health care, even to veterans who are coming back from Iraq, that they can spend all this money on an office has been very ineffective. And, you know, the idea that a paid employee of the federal government was out there handing out this propaganda, I have no objection to it in principle. I think people should be able to speak, but it is an example of the waste of time and effort.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there are 12 states in America now that regulate the use of medical marijuana, and California in particular has been victimized by DEA raids on those dispensaries. How would this bill affect
either bill, because you have the medical marijuana bill, this is a border bill, it would say that at the very least, well, two ways. If this bill passed, the patients would no longer be subject to harassment. You would need the medical marijuana bill to protect the clinics as well. So I'd want to see both bills passed. But as you know, as you said, you know, I'll give credit to Janet Reno. When she was Attorney General, she did not do this. John Ashcroft became Attorney General in this right-wing administration and started prosecuting very sick people who were following California law to take marijuana. Really a despicable set of activity, it seems to me. Either bill would stop that with regard to the patients. You'd need both bills to be able to protect the clinics.
Okay. Now, just north of California in Oregon, there's some cannabis supporters there that are putting together a measure that would tax and regulate the sales of marijuana through liquor stores in the state. Would this bill help in that realm, or are we going to have to go
farther? It would allow them to, I take it back. You'd have to go beyond that, because this bill is for personal use and nonprofit distribution and effect sharing. I agree with that proposal. But, you know, I want to have the debate about the basic principle about whether or not the federal government should be regulating people's private lives. Now, ultimately, you would want to get to that, but I don't want it to be distorted into, oh, you're going to have these massive distributions. I mean, the principle, by the way, and I want to address one argument, which I hope some of the people listening will also be able to use. One of the questions I get is, well, why are you encouraging the use of marijuana? And the answer is, I'm not. There's this notion that's really very antithetical to the kind of government we want to live in. It says that, well, human activity is divided into two categories. One, things that should be criminal. Two, things that the government is encouraging. And there are some things I want to encourage. I do want to encourage energy conservation, and I think we should encourage people to exercise and, you know, eat healthy in some ways. But on the whole, the view ought to be that what you choose to do on your leisure time is your own. And the fact that it isn't illegal doesn't mean I'm encouraging it. People do a lot of things in this society that I don't do, that if you ask my advice, I'd say, gee, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I shouldn't make them criminal. And that's what we're saying with smoking marijuana. This notion that if the government doesn't send you to jail for it, the government's telling you to do it, misunderstands the nature of a free government.
Good point. It's a black and white thinking there. Now, some critics might point out here that the bill, as it's written right now, allows the possession of up to 100 grams of marijuana, about 3.5 ounces. And some people might point out that that's an extreme amount. How did you come up with that amount?
Well, we tried to have a margin that people wouldn't be unduly harassed for. To be honest, the details at this point are less important than getting the principle out there.
Okay.
And, you don't want people who have a personal use stash to get caught up in this in a way. As I said, there's no exactitude here, and I would hope we could debate the principle. Obviously, we'd be flexible on the specifics when we got to it.
Okay. Another line of attack that I can envision here is people saying that by decriminalizing the possession without doing anything about the sales, all you do is create more of a market for the black market that already exists that causes all the harms of marijuana.
Well, we couldn't be doing that. Anybody with any sense of reality understands that there's a flourishing black market now, because one of the oddest defenses I get of the law is, well, don't repeal the law, it's not being enforced. And that's a terrible way to deal with the law. You don't want to tell police officers and others, look, we don't really care about this law, so we're going to keep it on the books, but we're going to tell you not to enforce it. I mean, the notion that there's any deterrent effect in the law right now, I think it's very small.
Okay. Now, you're in Massachusetts, up in the Northeast, and I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon, out in the West. And our areas of the country seem to be a lot more tolerant to marijuana use and its users. Why is there, in your opinion, such opposition in Washington and in some other places in the country to this notion?
Well, I think it's cultural lag. Look, people have seen drugs do bad things to people, but in particular, marijuana became identified first in the 30s and later in the 60s with kind of countercultural activity. It was identified with musicians who engaged in interracial dating at a time in the 30s when the prejudices on race were so strong. In the 60s, it particularly became identified with people who were against the war. And I think that's why it's hard to understand in rational terms why you have this crusade on the books with people like the ONDCP against marijuana and you know, not at all against alcohol. So I think it has to do with cultural things. But the other point I would make is this. You know, the politicians today are people, most of whose careers began 20, 30, and 40 years ago. I think the average voter today is much less obsessed with this. And indeed, as you look at the younger people, they think it's silly. So I think this is one where, particularly over the years coming forward, the politicians, as I said, are going to be educated by the public to lose their fear of doing the right thing.
Now, Congressman Frank, when you first announced this on the Bill Maher show, you had made the point that you've been in office for so long now that you really don't care what other people might think of you doing this. What do you think the political ramifications might be, though, for other?
Well, I did say I thought I could get away with it now, and I may have been misinterpreted. What I really meant was I think that we can have a public debate now where there'll be a lot of support for it. Personally, look, people, when I first ran for office, people used this against me because I'd advocated it in the state legislature, so it was used against me in campaigns of 1882. I genuinely believe that the average citizen understands that this is a silly law. And as I said, I think the public's ahead of the politicians. So what I was trying to do was to get to my colleagues and say, look, don't be afraid of doing the right thing here.
Okay. Now, as far as the nuts and bolts of Congress, where does this bill head next? Has it made it to committee? Will it be assigned?
It will be assigned to committee because I'm dealing with criminal penalties. It'll go to the Judiciary Committee primarily. And I don't expect anything to happen for the rest of this year, but I would hope that we could have some hearings on it next year. You know, look, as you have mentioned, we've had the state's rights to medical marijuana law. That started out with a few votes, a handful of votes. It's now getting 40% of the House up in 170-180 range. It's not there yet, but it's moving, and I think the same thing will happen here once we start talking about it.
Excellent. Well, Congressman Barney Frank is the chief sponsor of the H.R. 5843 bill, the bill to end federal penalties for the use of marijuana by responsible adults. And, sir, we thank you very much for joining us here on the show.
I'm glad that we had a chance to talk tomorrow.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from P.J. O'Rourke, the satirist and writer, who said, quote, "Anyway, no drug, not even alcohol, causes the fundamental ills of society. If we're looking for the source of our troubles, we shouldn't test people for drugs. We should test them for stupidity, ignorance, greed, and love of power," end quote. What a fine sentiment that is. Couldn't agree more. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for the podcast, and thanks for downloading us every day here at the Daily Audio Stash. We really appreciate you making us one of the most popular cannabis blogs and podcasts on the internet. Check us out at stash.normal.org, where you can get the hyperlinks to all the information we reference on the podcast. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.